You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, I'm Captain Dean, and welcome back to another episode. My guest is the one and only Julie Milam.
Dean, I am so excited to be here on the other side of the mic.
Yes, welcome to the Sound Atlas. And I was going to say in the very beginning that you have interviewed just about everybody in the local music scene, but yet it is your turn to be interviewed.
Because
you have a story to tell.
I do.
And you do not play music, correct?
I do not play. But, I do not sing. I do not read music. I do not write music.
But you feel it and you love it.
I am passionate.
And you are, extremely passionate about music. You have brought something to this local music scene a few years ago through television. And leading up to what you have done, our town had a very active music scene. Over the years, it's kind of a roller coaster of waves of things, but we've always had clubs, we've always had music stores, we've always had a really active music scene in general, and then the amplifier came along, which was really in tune with the music scene of
Game
the
changer.
Underground.
Right.
The big stuff, the concerts in the parks, and then there was the underground stuff. And a lot of the bands that were active started getting featured and all that stuff. But over the years, we've had amazing access to local radio and local press. And then you come in with television, and it really changed a lot, I think, for a lot of the local music scene.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think so.
I think really what my perception is of local music is more about the artist and not about the event. It's not about your concert performance at XYZ venue.
Mm-hmm.
It's about who you are as musicians and artists and the talent that you bring to the stage.
Right.
So I think I wanted to tell the story a little bit different.
And you do. And you've captured it well.
And I'm never going to give up telling the story of every single artist, because you know what? Not everyone's going to make it on the radio.
It's true.
But it doesn't mean that the people that don't can't have bigger careers.
Well, you just never know. You never know who's going to see that and hear that song or see that band and go, wow, that's great.
Well, the influence is endless if you would just reach out and talk about it.
Right.
And so that's what I decided to do, is not only use the platform of television,
mm-hmm.
but also use our social media platform. Thankfully, we have a news website that people go to all day for
right.
weather and for news headlines.
And it's just
while
mixed in there. Yeah.
Why don't I make sure that there's local music?
It's there.
Why don't I go to a local venue, say Tidballs, and your band
right.
is there getting ready to do sound check. Well, hey, I don't let just anybody in here.
I'm telling
you. But you know what? I'll let Julie in here with a microphone because she's going to broadcast my sound check and make sure we sell more tickets
right.
tonight.
It's been amazing to get to know you over the years. I think we met maybe 3 or 4 years
yes.
ago. And when I got the hosting platform for this, I messaged you, and you said the other day, this is so funny to me still, that you said, I thought you were just being polite. And I was like, no.
You didn't want me to feel left
out.
I just knew.
You are absolutely a cornerstone now, in my opinion. Is that the right word? Of this music scene. You are a true, solid person that is, we all kind of circle around you because you help us.
Well, I feel it. You know,
I don't know
I get
how
it,
else to express that.
I'm honored to be thought of as a part of the music scene. You know what? I want to give more than I get,
mm-hmm.
but you guys inspire me every single day, from the venues to the radio stations to the fellow media. But you know what? The artists
right.
are the heart and soul of the language we all speak.
Right.
Music is the one thing that we share, Dean, no matter what our background or beliefs are. Everyone is touched by some kind of music, and
yeah.
it really does fire up your soul.
It does, and I very much can relate to that, because I understand what you mean. I mean, it's not just one thing for me. It's like this whole, you know, I'm into one thing, but I'm into a lot of variety too. So, but as a music fan, I can relate to that, because like you said, you don't play music. You're not a band. You don't write songs.
Never been in a band.
It's fascinating, I guess, and I've met several people over my life that are like you. They're very passionate about music. They're hardcore fans. They collect. They go see certain bands that they're their favorite bands, and you know, collect the ticket stubs and all that stuff. But they do not play an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
They don't write songs. They're just so in awe of what music does for their life.
Right.
And it's a big part of their life. It is. All the time.
And a lot of those fans, those big mega music fans, want to be close to the artists. Right. They want to get to know them better because they do inspire them.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I hope I can inspire some people just to continue loving music and to get a little bit closer to the music.
I think you're doing a good job.
Well, I have a lot more to come.
Well, let's get back to the beginning of what you have to tell, because it's an incredible story. I've gotten to know you over the years. We've had various conversations over time, and I learned all these little bits and things about you, and I'm like, wow, this lady's really done some impressive stuff.
She's holding out.
But you have an incredible story to tell about music in your life. So I can't ask you what kind of guitar you play. I can't ask you about when your next show is.
What endorsements I have.
But I can ask you the very question that starts just about every episode of the Sound Atlas. Julie, where are you from?
I was born in Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
I was put up for adoption, so I lived in foster care for a little while.
Okay.
I was blessed to have been adopted by a couple who moved to Hendersonville, Tennessee, not very far from here.
Yeah. I was just there last week.
Yeah. Mini Music City. And my godparents were Ray and Carrie Cash, mm-hmm. which is the mother and father of Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm.
They lived across the street from me. Johnny was across the street from them. Roy Orbison was on the corner. Opry music legend Bob Lumen was on the corner. Yep. We've got Marty Stewart on that street now. Conway Twitty at the end of the street.
Of course, so, not far from the famous Twitty City.
Twitty City, that's right. I can remember when it was built. But, you know, these were my neighbors, Dean, and I didn't see them as heroes, legends, icons.
Right.
They literally
It was family, neighborhood friends. It was just community.
It's no different than you hanging out at the houses in your neighborhood.
Right.
My neighbors just happen to have gold and platinum plaques on the wall.
See, my aunt and uncle grew up in near Beaver Dam, or it was a Horse Branch, and they grew up knowing Bill Monroe. They knew him. He was just a guy that lived down the street.
Just Bill.
He was just Bill.
That's it.
And to them, he was just Bill. And every now and then, he'd come over and play mandolin on the front porch and hang out in Rosie in Kentucky. That was all they knew. But then they'd see pictures of newspaper stuff of him playing the Opry and stuff. And so I can kind of understand how that must have been. But to an outsider like me, it's Johnny Cash. It's Roy Orbison.
But
it's part of the Million Dollar Quartet, you know?
Don't
I mean, that's a big deal.
I was a child.
Yeah.
So when you're a little kid, even Bill Monroe, I'm not seeing them on the Opry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing them while I'm jumping on the trampoline at Roy Orbison's house. It's like, hey, there's Roy cooking out. Or I'm
in the
backseat of Johnny's Mercedes at the bus stop waiting on the bus to come because it's raining outside. Or we're in the guard shack at Johnny's house handing out Halloween candy. I was born on Johnny's mother's birthday. So every year until she passed away, we had our birthday parties together.
That's
fascinating. A lot of those were either at the Cash home or at the Johnny Cash Museum in the back.
Right.
And we'd have these big family get-togethers. But I didn't see them in their professional life. I saw them in their private personal life. I heard private personal stories.
When did it kind of hit you? Like, as you got older, did you just... Oh, there's Soki. We are at the WNKY studios, by the way. It's probably the only episode of the Sound Atlas that may ever be recorded here, which is very cool, in my opinion. But that is Soki.
That is Soki. Welcome, Soki, to the show. Soki lives
with
me, by the way.
Yeah,
so she comes to work with me every day, and she goes home with me every day. So she's extremely protective and making sure no one interrupts myself and Captain Dean.
I like it.
So to answer your question, when did I really see who they were?
Did you put on a record or go in a record store and be like, hey,
well,
Roy Orbison? Like, I didn't realize he wrote these incredible songs that changed the world.
Well, ironically, I was able to hear some of those songs as they were written because these guys strum guitars all the time walking around the house. It's coming up with an idea. So they would ask us what we thought of the music, which I thought was just creative collaboration. And hey, I'm going to say, kind of like it or no. My father was partner in one of the famous tour bus companies in Nashville.
Okay.
So I was
And I'm aware of some of these because they are kind of they're kind of scattered, but they're Hendersonville, there's one in like Goodlettsville, there's one like south of Nashville and like Franklin and Brentwood. Like they're kind of all over the city.
Well, that's how I learned how famous these people were, because I would be coming home from school and we'd be stuck behind a tour bus. And it's kind of like, we don't understand why we can't get home from school. I want to get home from school and have my snack, or I want to go play with my friends. Why are we waiting behind this bus? It's just, well, no, they were sitting out in front of the Stars Homes listening to the tour guide tell, ooh, and this is the home of Johnny Cash.
That kind of, okay.
You're talking about
a Star Homes tour, yes, like they have in Hollywood.
Yes. So if you're in Nashville and you're in town for the weekend or whatever, you can actually pay to take a tour of the Stars Homes, and they'll take you to Franklin, Tennessee, and to Brentwood, and to...
I think it was a much bigger thing back in those days than nowadays. They're off the grid.
I'm a little older than most people think, Dean. But I knew that there were lots...
I'm not going to ask that question.
And I'm not answering. There's a lot of demand for people to come to our neighborhood and see the people that live there.
Well, obviously, I think most people that maybe know a lot about the music industry of Nashville, because I learned this when I worked down there, a lot of the stars live in either Hendersonville area or in the Brentwood area.
Right.
They're not downtown unless they have a penthouse down on 2nd Avenue or whatever, you know.
Maybe when they're younger, but by the time they have families, then they do.
They've got land, they've got gates. Yes. It's like Graceland, but you don't... It's not a shrine to go to.
Right. It's on a regular street with regular homes near it.
Because they're regular people.
They are, and they want to live a regular life. So I was fortunate enough to be a part of that private life. Now, I did hear highly confidential things during those days. Mm-hmm. And I was told by my parents, hey, you know what? This is not to ever be repeated. You're hearing some...
So as you were growing, like teenager, starting to pick up on things, right? Like details of life.
Yes.
Like you're saying, when you're five, it's just adults talking in the other room. But when you're 14, you pick up on things.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say as I became a teenager, obviously, the Cash, my godmother and father passed away. And obviously, Roy Orbison was gone. So things changed by then. But, you know, as a child, I'm going to the Grand Ole Opry with my parents, rolling my eyes like, oh, do I really have to sit through this Grand Ole Opry show? Because that was no fun for me. But the fact that they went as guests of the stars was a big deal to them.
Right.
Well, I didn't care about the music then. What happened was I was forced to get a job when I was 16, like most people. And the only thing I could talk about intelligently was music. I was a painfully shy child because I was told to never speak. Children are to be seen and not heard. And the environment that I grew up in, it was important that I didn't say much. I didn't interrupt grown-up conversation. Right. So
this
I was
what I do every time I host one of these things.
You do a great job too. So I was very quiet, very timid.
Right.
Believe that.
What was your first job?
My first job was at Record Bar and Tracks.
Oh, get out of here!
Record store in Rivergate Mall.
In Rivergate. Rivergate. Now I knew of the one in Rivergate, but obviously the one in Bowling Green was a mecca for us, you know.
Which is how I did go to Rivergate Mall and Matt Pfeffercorn.
Every now and then I'd go to Record Bar in Goodlettsville.
Yes.
So yeah, that's
so that was
awesome.
My first job ever, and I just loved it. So it really brought me out of my shell because I could talk about something that I loved.
Right. And be in public.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I didn't have to worry about what I was saying and to whom.
Right.
I could just say, man, Dean, if you really love this record, you're going to dig this one. And I promise it's probably not going to be on the radio, but they're equally as talented, probably more so.
Right.
And so I was turning people onto music, and they'd come back and say, oh my gosh, that was an amazing record. What do you have that's like this? And so somebody was actually interested in what I had to say for the first time in my life, but I'd learned it from listening to music.
But you were also, you had quality taste in music. Like, you probably didn't fall in the trap of the one-hit wonders and the...
No, but I had my days, Dean.
We all had our moments, you know, but...
I mean, I was a Poison fan and all of that back in the day. And, you know, I was judged hardcore by my neighbors for those kinds of music choices that wasn't really music.
But it was
really
part of the time.
It was.
So it made sense.
I guess it did. It made sense to me.
Right. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, those guys growing up as musicians in the era of their childhood.
Right.
I mean, they invented stuff, but they also were inspired by things that they didn't technically sound like.
Right.
So I'm a firm believer in you can find inspiration in art of all types. And as a musician, you can find inspiration in music that I may not be in a bluegrass band, but there might be a hook in that song that's like, hey, I could try to replicate that on a punk rock yes. bass line or something. And that's the music language. It really does have, you know, it connects on all these levels that you just scientifically can't break down.
No, it influences all of us in so many areas of your life. And sometimes it's ways that you don't even suspect until it literally transforms into something larger.
Oh, yeah. That's really cool, though. And the fact that you're in the business you're in television, mm-hmm. and yet I guess it's a form of entertainment.
Absolutely is.
Of course.
Yes.
starting off in a record store, that says something, though, to me about you. You're, like you said, it's the love for music. Mm-hmm. You're in the field of music, and you're in the field of talking to people and getting to know the customers connecting. And the regulars that come in. And you're also learning a lot about music because you're discovering things, I'm assuming, while you're flipping through
Well,
the
and
store.
I have coworkers that love music and they love different styles of music. So they're going to pop open a record and we're going to listen to that in store. And it's like, wow, I've never heard anything like that. And that's
so
pretty
you
cool.
Must have been through that a lot.
So I learned about so much music that by the time I got to college, I went to the University of Tennessee in Knoxville.
Yes, which explains you are a diehard Orange Tennessee fan.
Yes, and this is not our year so far in football.
No,
it
is not.
I bleed orange no matter
but
what.
But what they did with the little boy that made the t-shirt thing and stuff, like that's beautiful.
Gosh.
So as we're taping this, that was just in the news, what, 3 weeks ago or something like that?
Amazing. And you know what? That child had no intention of that being national news. He genuinely just wanted a t-shirt.
Oh, it's a beautiful story.
It is.
But it explains a lot because I see you constantly in orange and sharing things. But it's cool. Julie, I think it's cool. I love the state of Tennessee. I am born and raised here in Bowling Green, very close to Nashville.
I grew up in Nashville.
I go to Nashville all the time.
Yeah.
I work down there. I live down there. I've done a lot of stuff. But the state of Tennessee, in my opinion, is like you can't touch it. And I've been all over the country. I love Tennessee.
Thank you.
To
I love
be
Tennessee
from Memphis
too.
To go to Knoxville and spend time in the mountains, mm-hmm. and which I love. Everybody
I know.
Knows
I
I'm a
too.
Gatlinburg nut. And to be in Nashville and all the stuff in between, you know, there's a lot of great stuff in that state. So you have covered the state.
I literally have gone from Memphis to Nashville to Knoxville.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
So I started skipping class in college to pick up shifts at the record store.
Excellent.
And it's kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm doing okay in school, but man, I can't get enough music. And I was the chick that was going out every night to find new music, new venues. I want to catch the hottest, coolest artist that's going to come through town because Knoxville's a pretty decent-sized town.
Right. And I've heard good things. Oh, even years ago, I've heard that Knoxville had a good music scene. And I would always kind of compare it to maybe like a Louisville. It's about the size of Louisville as far as a city and a metro goes. But musically speaking, I've heard Knoxville had a great art scene and a great music scene. And a lot of bands from around this area would go there to play shows and stuff.
Right. And still do. I mean, I think it's growing as we speak now. But that was really what drove me. So one day I was in this music store. By then, Record Barn Tracks had been bought out by Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
And then it became Blockbuster.
Yeah. I remember
Turtles.
I stayed through
all of that.
Yeah.
And one day, back in the day, the record store reps or the record label reps would come into the record store and they would bring in store play CDs to play.
Mm-hmm.
They would bring free concert tickets, T-shirts, any kind of swag. And they would.
I think you went in the right business.
I did. So they would come in and they'd say, okay, well, whoever can do whatever can get these free tickets. So I can remember distinctly. One of the Warner Brothers reps came into Record Barn Rivergate and said, there's this new cat coming to play in Nashville, and I don't know if you're going to like him, but here's 2 tickets if you'd like to go. And I said, what's his name? He said, Lenny Kravitz. And I went,
first album.
First record.
Wow. Let Love Rule, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Went to that show, fell in love with his music. And him.
Of course.
But I thought, ooh, this record label rep's got some pretty cool stuff.
Right.
I'm sitting at the Cannery, which is not... I mean, and we go to the Cannery all the time, so that wasn't a unique experience.
Cannery's about to close. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
That's sad. A little moment of silence for the Cannery. I don't know why they would... I understand how and why, but The fact that 328 was destroyed years ago pisses me off to this day.
Can I tell you that I worked for 328 when they decided to tear it down?
That
was devastating.
That sucks.
Yeah, but when I realized that record label reps had access to things when artists were on the cusp of being discovered, and it's like once I'm engaging with them in a record store, they've already been discovered. It's already out.
Right.
So I'm trying to now get in front of the curve of the record store and find the artist before anybody knows them.
Right, right.
So I called the Warner Brothers rep and I said, hey, I'm skipping class. What can I do to further my career? And he said, come home to Nashville for the summer. I'll get you an internship with Warner Brothers and we'll see where we can go from there.
And Warner Brothers was on 18th or 17th?
No, it had just moved. Well, it just moved into its brand new building where it is today located.
Okay.
This was May of 1990. Ooh, I don't want to tell.
93 or 2. 94. No, was it 94?
Yeah, May of 1994. I came
home.
It's
okay. You're in good company.
Worked for Warner Brothers, and that led to opportunities to work for Elektra Records, Atlantic Records.
That's fine.
And then Mercury Records.
And that's cool because you had your finger on the pulse of that, but you didn't necessarily take that to get in to see Faith Hill and, you know, whatever.
No, I've never
I'm trying to think of some country people, but I can't.
No, and honestly, when I started with Warner Brothers, working for Warner, Elektra, and Atlantic was really all pop. There was some country. You know, they had John Michael Montgomery and some artists at that point. Just because the offices were in Nashville didn't mean that we were dealing with
just
country.
That's true. And a lot of people. Blowfish,
on Atlantic.
A lot of people don't take in consideration that Nashville's Nashville. Music City, country music, blah, 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 blah. The labels are there. And the labels are a part of a bigger thing. It's a global thing.
I worked a KISS tour when I was at Mercury.
A ton of rock records that we grew up thinking, this was recorded in Hollywood. This was recorded in New York. A lot of them were done in Nashville.
Oh my gosh, they're still being done there every single day.
They always have been. And so a lot of people don't really know that side of Nashville. And that's why Nashville, I think, was known for having a great rock scene of not only the big acts would come through and play Municipal, and later on they'd play at like Starwood and all the bigger stuff, but you also had the underground stuff. The Exit Inn was open in like 74 or something like that, and you had a ton of great bands play there. You and I are the generation of the 328.
Yes.
We get that.
Yes.
And we could talk all day about what we saw at 328, and unfortunately that was tore down years ago.
It was for the growth of Nashville, and I understood that.
But 328 was a big deal. I think it had the better shows than a lot of the others. That's just my opinion.
I agree.
But like the Cannery had good shows, and Mercury Lounge. Do you remember when Third and Lindsley was like tiny corner stage?
Yes.
That's awesome.
12th and Porter.
12th and Porter had good stuff.
I mean,
there was great stuff all over the city, rock and roll oriented. And the reason why, I think, is because those bands had places to go. They would come to town. They knew people. They had access to these studios. They had access to their record label people.
Great producers live there. I mean,
it's
people
all there.
Come there to work.
It's
they don't
all
just
there.
Come to stop in and play a show, which is the beauty about that city. And I really feel honored to have worked with some of the artists that I did. The very first artist I was sent out on the road with was Motley Crue.
And you survived.
You know what? I grew up so fast in that experience. The very first in-store I worked with them, I was waiting on a bus to show up. You know, I'm here, I'm scared, I've got my backstage pass, and I'm waiting on the artist to show up. And like, where's the bus? Well, they show up in a Nissan Maxima.
Fantastic.
And they get out and called me every horrible thing I'd never ever heard. Like, it was brutal. And I thought, ooh, what have I gotten myself into? It was bad. It was bad. And the way they treated their fans was bad.
Right.
They weren't real great to their face, but they were worse after the fact. So once everybody's gone and they're on the bus.
I'm thinking about that time frame. I know what was going on in that.
They just didn't respect the people that were spending money for their music.
Of course not.
And you know what? That hurt me. But it was a great reality check because what you see on stage at a performance is absolutely not who they are behind the scenes.
No, I learned that the hard way because I was behind the scene in production.
But now you see from growing up around famous artists and hearing their personal stories, their private stories, to being backstage working in the industry, seeing their true selves come out and not their stage persona. I've always been attracted to who the real person is behind the curtain because sometimes it's worth telling that story and sometimes it's worth telling people to run.
Yeah. Don't buy the next record. They're not cool.
Let me just tell you what they think of you.
Yeah. Yes. No, I get it because I met Reba McEntire. And I will not tell the story. Let's just say it that.
There are absolutely people who will break your heart if you have so much support for their talent and then you meet them as individuals, you're crushed.
No, I met several people in the industry, mostly in the country side. Mm-hmm. And like Marty Stewart was fantastic. Garth Brooks was one of the nicest people I'd ever met. And then I met Reba McEntire. And it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm working. I'm working for you. I saw Wynonna Judd
send her security guy out and rip a camera out of somebody's hands because they were taking a photo of her walking to the bus and she had her son with her. And they confiscated this fan's camera, literally took the whole camera.
That sounds about right.
And it's like, you know, that's the shame.
But I understand that comes with the territory, and sometimes you should just know when to ask the question or take the picture. But
I think approach makes a difference. Yeah. The way people approach other people makes a difference.
It's true. And that has made you who you are. Because you've watched all this.
I've learned all of it.
So, real quick, you're talking about Motley Crue being like the first thing.
That was my first experience working.
But you're an intern, right? Or were you hired at that point?
No, by then I
was
working.
Okay, yes. So they offered you a job.
I was given a job. Okay. See, when I started at Warner Brothers, I was doing merchandising. So we were going back out into the record stores that I previously worked in, and we learned to fold posters and do really cool displays on the walls. And then now I'm the person taking in-store play CDs and concert tickets out to record stores. And it's like, that's called stepping up
the ladder,
that's
right?
That's right. You know what? I learned from the best, and I spent time with them, and they taught me the ropes. And then when a job came open with Elektra, I went there. Was able to work on Hootie and the Blowfish's original record with Atlantic. I did a lot more country with Elektra.
Right.
But Elektra really had a
pretty good thumb in the country music business.
They did. And, you know, we would go to New York and work in the New York office some. Here's a great story for you. So the New York executives would fly in. Sylvia Roan would fly in on the Elektra jet, and she'd come into Nashville to our office there, and she really thought everybody in Nashville was a hillbilly. So we purposely put hay bales out in front of the office, and everyone wore overalls. And no shoes. And we were outside barefoot in our overalls. And we'd have matching shirts on, and we would welcome her to Nashville. And it was this running joke. Every time she came, we acted like bumpkins. And you know what?
Did she laugh?
She did. Okay. She did. And she learned her lesson.
Hopefully she knew the truth, right?
She did. And she loved the money that we made for her, too.
Exactly.
You know, I will tell you some of the things that I learned on the label side. Some incredible artists can be made with fantastic marketing and very little talent.
Yep.
You know, production can do so much, but marketing can do so much more.
Oh, yeah.
But then you have some insanely talented people who get developmental deals. And I had one experience where I was instructed to never make friends with an artist because I was guaranteed a longer career than they were. And it would become awkward. If I become friends with Captain Dean and his record does really, really well for 3 years, well, I've got a 10-year career here. When your record is done and they don't renew you for another contract.
I get it.
Or you get no more airplay. Julie says adios to her friend Dean.
Yeah.
And Dean doesn't understand.
Yeah. I thought you were my friend.
Okay. So I heard that advice and I didn't heed it. And I made very good friends with a young lady who was 2 years younger than me. And don't forget, I was young. So she and I became best friends.
Okay.
Like, I hung out with her all the time. So every Monday, she would call me crying and say, why did nobody add my record today? You're in radio promotion, Julie. You're calling the radio stations. Why could they not hear that you were giving them the next greatest single? And I had to tell my friend, I'm sorry, your music is great, but today it's just not the best.
Yeah.
That's hard. And that was a lesson that I learned
the
hard way.
Yeah.
Because I care about people and I want to make every artist a huge success. And I didn't have that power.
You have it now. And I think what you're telling has a profound, like, I get it. I get why you're doing these TV things.
I just want to tell everybody.
I wouldn't say everybody, but you pretty much say, if you're a musician and you've got a story to tell, I will do a feature on you. And I think that's stemming off of what you're telling about how that kind of harsh hit of reality, but you're in a bigger world in that. You know what I mean? Like, that's a global thing. This is more television, but it's got spots. Mm-hmm. It's not CNN. It's not broadcast
not
over.
Yet.
Yeah, not yet.
You give me a minute, I might get there.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that you basically have a goal and you claim it.
I do.
I think you will eventually be on that. But
I just saw so much talent squandered. You know, people would get signed to a developmental deal, and we were told, hey, there's some really great material here with this artist, but the record's never going to come out, ever. We've signed them to a deal, but we don't have to put the record out. But now we own the rights to the music. So you're going to get close to this artist, and you're going to do some photo shoots, and we may record a video, but you're probably never going to get it to radio.
So what was the point of that?
Well, they own the music.
But what's the music going to do if you don't put it out? Like, try to get a bigger artist to do one of the songs?
Maybe, okay. But everything works on a calendar. You know, you have 12 months in the year, and you can only release music ever so often, and every Monday is new single day.
True.
And we're repping these radio stations.
I don't know all that
and
detail.
And playlists. So say you've got a station that has a 40-song playlist. Well, every song is moving its way up the chart to number one, as the natural progression would be.
Mm-hmm.
So the number one song will come off the chart, but it may fall to like number four. It's not gone. So it didn't really free up a space on the chart.
Mm.
Everything moves up. So every week, if you're restricted to X number of songs on a chart, you have to wait for something to go away before you can put a new song on there.
Wow.
So every week, you've got so many record labels with so many artists with so many singles, and we're all fighting for that one spot.
Of course.
And so you have to be a damn good salesperson to say, here's how you're going to get listeners, Mr. Radio Station, with this song instead of this song.
Right.
And so I was peddling that music every single week, dying to get my way. We had a board that you could go and write the call letters of the radio station on. And every time you got an ad of a radio station, you'd go write it on the board. They'd ring a bell. It was a big deal. And I just wanted my way. And I would call KZLA in Los Angeles every week, the same day, the same time. I had 10 minutes a week to get my way. So how do you do that? You make relationships with people.
Yeah.
And you say, here's the business you're in. You need ratings on your radio station.
Right.
So here's how I'm going to help you get that. But what I need in return is you to believe in my artist.
Mm-hmm.
Put it out there. Let your listeners listen. But I wanted my way.
That is an interesting... You literally walk in the fence. But you saw both sides of it. So that is interesting.
And today, the fence is mine to make.
Yeah. You're
and
building
you know
a damn fence.
But I believe in local artists. And
and
now that I'm in television, I never intended to be in TV. This was a complete accident.
I'm excited to get to that story.
But what I see is that I can make what I want to with television. And if I show you that I support your music, I promise you Nashville's not going to knock down the doors to showcase local South Central Kentucky artists.
No,
they're not talking about our sports.
The thing about Nashville I think is interesting is a lot of people here think, we're the next Seattle. This is a great music scene. We've got great bands. We've got this and that. Why is nobody driving up from Nashville to sign all these bands? And I would be like, I don't know as much about the music industry as what you're telling, but I know enough. More than the average musician I've ever worked with or met. And I would just be like laughing. I'm like, you guys really don't understand. It's not how great your songs are.
No, it's about money.
That's a small percentage
it's all
about it.
Money.
It's about money. It's about how good do you look. Are you marketable? Could they put you in a movie?
It's how many songs can people download because they heard
well,
you sing it.
Nowadays, but
now
back then it was about...
But how many concerts
how many hits
can
you have?
How many social media followers do you have? I mean, there are restrictions on whether they'll ever look at you. They can look at your social media right now and go, nah, I'm good.
Yep.
Nope.
Because everything at this point seems like it's just a hodgepodge of influences all mixed into one. So it's like, well, that band reminds me of this, and that band reminds me of that, and that's long gone, and there's no market in that anymore.
No, but if you have the map of the record label roster, you can literally look at the roster. Same with booking agents, because I still deal with booking agents and promoters, and I can look on their website and see who they represent, and you can tell that there's not a lot of similar artists that they represent.
No.
it's one, but they're all fighting for that slot.
Yeah.
They all have a Chris Stapleton-esque artist, but only one has Chris Stapleton. Yeah. You know, they all have a duo or a four-piece that sounds like X, but only one of them's going to be the big one.
Right.
And so we're all competing for the same prize.
It's crazy.
And sometimes the most talented artist doesn't win, but the most talented marketing department at a record label does win.
Yep. And there's those are reason. The songs you hear on the radio for 3 weeks straight, and you can't get it out of your head.
Yeah, you know, when I had to ask for 100 spins a week of a song because we needed to get that number one,
yeah.
I promise we won't be back next week. You can completely remove it from your playlist
yeah.
if you'll just get us to number one this week. That's wow. all we want. Or, hey, we're this close to a platinum record. Can you just wear it out just one more week? You know, I mean, that's where you help each other out because wow. you've got to get to a goal.
It really is a cutthroat thing.
It's a business.
Yeah.
And everybody's business has to have money.
And this is the side of the music business that I think 98% of the musicians have no clue. No clue.
No.
I think, like, even I know it's there. I saw a lot of things when I was working in Nashville, and it was disgusting. Like, when I came back to Bowling Green, I almost quit music mm-hmm. because I was disturbed by the things I saw, the way women were treated, the way the musicians were treated, the way the music was talked about and picked apart. Like, somebody writes a great song and go, that's a great song, but here's what you need to do. Like, that's the kind of stuff I was watching behind the scenes, and it was just... It was disturbing and it was disgusting. And at that point, I was like 24. And I was like, I don't even know if I want to do this anymore. Because yeah. you learn real quick when you leave a city like this. You might be a good drummer in this town, but down there, you're one in a million. And you're lucky if you get a gig at the crappiest bar on a Wednesday night and yeah. make $5.
And at that point, you just really want to go out on the road with somebody who's already there.
Yeah. It's and like, I kind of did. I did a few tours, and they were up-and-coming stars. Yeah. And to relate to what your field of what you're talking about, I was in this band with this guy that was touring. He had a really good record out, hadn't been signed yet. He got an offer for an artist development deal. And we walked into a boardroom just like the one we're sitting at, beautiful table, chairs, the suits sit down, the band sits down, and he just starts going through this list of demands of what he wants and how he wants to do things. They stood up and shook his hand and said, it was nice meeting you, and walked out of the door. And about 3 weeks later, I was back in Bowling Green working at a grocery store. I'm not kidding. That's a true story.
I know.
So I understand how that stuff works. I had to learn how to play music again for fun and not dive too far into the business side of what the things that you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand them and I know the meaning of them. But it wasn't for me.
You start to see music differently. You know, there was a band in Nashville that I was very close to, and I would hear them, and I would hang out at the band house, and they would have me come over while they were writing, or they would say, hey, we really want to play these tracks for you. Can you just give us your feedback? Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, I'm hearing so much music at work that I kind of know what's popular right now.
Right.
But I could look at you and go, you're the Jim Morrison of the Doors. Like, this band is fantastic.
Yeah.
But I'll sign you today if it's just you. Like, yep. I love your band.
Yeah.
But your voice
that's so
is
common.
The one thing that's not
it's
anywhere
so
out
common.
There.
Yeah.
And then I started hearing myself, and that's how an A&R person would talk.
Right.
I'm not an A&R person because you know what? I love what you love. And if you're at home and you're your most unique you when you're with the rest of the band,
right.
why would I pull you out to make you what I need you to be? Why don't I support you for what you are?
Right.
And so that was a turning point in my career where I started to become one of them.
Mm.
I started to hear music from a commercial standpoint of how I can make money with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, that is a smash hit. But I don't want them. I just want him.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't me. That's not who I am. But I became that. And then I
well,
decided,
because you worked in it.
Well,
you were
I
there. It was
it
like they were molding you into that.
Well, they are. But you also see the success. You know, we had number one parties and platinum parties.
Yeah.
And it was always
and they're
a
fun.
Party. They are fun. But it was a great pat on the back for everybody coming together as a team.
Yeah.
From the management to the promoter to the publicist to yep. the publishing company, and like everybody, there are so many people who
work
together.
But it's also a Polaroid.
It is.
You shake it, you look at it for
gone.
5 minutes, you toss it and take another
You're
one.
You're only as good as what you did yesterday mm-hmm. in yep. that business. And so I learned that, you know what, instead of trying to capitalize and profit and to find the next big hit, that's exhausting. Mm. Everybody's chasing their tail constantly.
I can imagine.
And you take the hits where you don't see them coming, and it's like, oh my gosh, people didn't like that record because they hated the cover. Like, really, people would hate the photo shoot.
You know what? I've done that.
And it's like, I won't buy a record if I think the cover looks strange.
If
the
artwork
sucks, they're like, nah, I'm not going to listen
normally
to the project.
Normally, the artwork can tell you if that's going to be a good record or not.
Hence the reason The Voice came out. And you know what? They're actually judging music on the way it sounds
right.
and not the way it looks or presented. So, you know what? I have a lot of respect for the way that that show was set up. But I just realized that my love for music is about the people. And the people who are blessed with the talent to make me feel good about what I'm hearing.
Didn't care about what they looked like.
So
cared about what they did.
Commercial.
How they did it.
If you want a number one record, I can mold you into that.
Or I can get your song to the right person to get a star to record it.
Yeah, I mean,
which those paychecks are much bigger.
Well, yeah. I mean, it depends. Do you want the music? If you want the money, if you're in it for the money, we can make you rich. But you're going to do what the public dictates.
Yeah, you're
and
a
what
puppet.
You are. But some people are okay with that.
And you know what? It's either or. You know what I mean? Like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. But obviously, I'm not the chiseled, handsome guy that could pull that off.
I think you are. Don't discredit yourself.
Well, you know. I'm the cool guy.
You're the cool cat, man. There's nothing you can't do.
Take it or leave it.
I love it.
How did you go from... I mean, I know we could sit here for hours and go through this list of bands you worked with. And a lot of people that listen to this are probably going to be pissed off that we don't. But I know you worked with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. The Motley Crue story was probably a great deal more to it. But in your mind, it was probably that's all you kind of need to know. It was that's what happened.
I was put into some seriously dangerous situations.
Yeah,
there were some artists who, because I was a young female and I was on the road by myself, a lot of times I would choose not to sleep on the buses.
Oh, I get it.
But I would drive behind them. And I got into some situations that were unsafe.
Yeah.
You know, people just really trying to bully me and push me around
because
I was a young kid. How could you know what you're talking about?
Right.
But I also had issues with some artists that were beyond their control as far as their emotions go with drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Major drug-induced artists that got hostile.
Yeah.
You know, to where I was fearful of my safety.
I can imagine.
There was one artist in particular at 328 Performance Hall who wouldn't take the stage, and it had been probably an hour, hour and a half between the opening act leaving the stage and the headliner. So people were getting upset, and they were asking for refunds.
Yeah.
So I went and knocked on the bus door, and I said, hey, you know, we're going to lose money on the show because you guys have got to take the stage. And I smelled flesh. I'll never forget it. I'd never smelled anything like it. They were all high on crack. Every one of them, tour manager, everyone, but they couldn't move. Like,
the tour manager is not supposed to do anything.
I know.
It's his job to get their ass to the stage.
They finally got to the stage and put on a hell of a show. Played for almost 2 hours.
High on crack.
People that stayed, I mean, they were, I'm not even going to tell you who it was. But
no,
it was
you
like,
don't have to, but I can imagine.
But the diehard fans that came to see that artist got one hell of a show.
Yeah.
But they had to be patient and understand that what they wanted would be delivered if they just stuck out there long enough. Mm. And I don't believe in that.
No.
I think if you're a musician and you want to play for the masses, then you've got to deliver to the masses.
Right. I mean, you can go back to working in a factory. So when people make it successful, because I never got to the point of tour bus life. I got close, but I didn't get there. And when I see people that get to the tour bus life, they're making a living, paying their bills by being a musician. And they just throw it away.
Doing what you love,
man. I know. But they get caught up in the, I'm a star, I can do whatever I want, and blah, blah, blah.
Some are genuine. You know, I worked Shania Twain's last world tour when I was at Mercury, and that's about the time that I left the industry because I knew at the level where she was, especially as a female artist, she was the first female entertainer of the year, and so many milestones that we had gone through when I worked with her on that record. But she genuinely was someone who would stay at the Lowe's Vanderbilt Plaza in Nashville, and she would go out for a run in the afternoon and run over to her office on Music Row with no security. People would stop her and ask for autographs as she's running down the street by mm-hmm. herself, and she was just as genuine to them as anybody else.
Right.
She was a gracious human being that had a lot of help, honestly. If you heard her first record and then you heard her post Mutt Lange records, right. there was a tremendous difference in her growth and her success, but she had a team behind her because yeah. she cared about them.
I was friends with J.D. Blair.
Oh, yeah.
I knew J.D. Okay. We were very yeah. close.
Yeah.
Because when I was working in Nashville, it was around that time.
Yeah.
So I got to know him very well.
It's a much smaller world than anybody gives it credit.
It is. And it's a very close thing, you know, behind the scenes especially. But we could go on for hours yes. about all the people you got to work with.
And I
with.
Won't bore you with
and
these
I,
stories.
I mean, save it for the book.
But it made, yes, but it made me who I am
right.
and gave me a love for music.
But what led you to get, you got into Warner Brothers, you were in merchandising, you moved your way into Elektra Records, you got into
the radio promotion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got into all these different fields in the actual music industry.
Yes.
What was the moment where you said, I'm done, I'm going to do something else?
So the moment arose that I left the music industry because I decided to get married and have a family.
Soki says, yes.
And Soki says, yes, I'm part of that family. But you know what?
Do I need to let?
You can let her in if you want. So the music industry life was not conducive to being a family. You know, there were very few women in leadership positions in the music business, and those that didn't have children, because it's really a 24-hour-a-day job. We'd be in the office all day, and then we'd work shows at night.
Yep.
I mean, there were nights after award shows where we would come to work the next morning still in our tuxedos and dresses from, you know, the CMAs the night before or from whatever event that we had been to.
Right.
So it was a long, hard job. We had a lot of fun. There was a whole lot of partying involved because there was always a lot to celebrate. But in order to be a wife and a mom, that was not the business that I was going to be able to manage both.
Right.
So
what did you get into?
So I married a guy who wanted to come to Bowling Green, Kentucky.
How about that?
And open,
it's a beautiful place.
And open a franchise of Pool and Spa Depot out of Nashville.
No.
Yes.
No, okay.
So March 4th of 2004, we opened Pool and Spa Depot right there by the airport.
Yep.
Still there, still doing well. I still
kind
send them
of tucked
business.
Away behind the
behind
road
BB&T
there. But
Bank.
Yeah.
Yes,
yep.
It is. So we built that and had a really, really successful business.
Yeah,
really
I remember that. Like, those are the kind of the commercials that get you wake up at 3 a.m. singing it.
Yeah. So for all of you music lovers that are from here or been around here for a long time, I'm going to tell you a really quick, funny story. When I decided to come to Bowling Green and open a swimming pool and hot tub store, Bowling Green had not been high on my list of cities.
I can't see why.
But primarily because my high school boyfriend broke my heart when he came to college at WKU and broke up with me for freedom. See, he was in a band here. And so after he broke my heart, once I got to college in Knoxville, I would come to Bowling Green to see his band play.
Really?
Yes.
And
I would stay at the band house.
Said
we can.
Band?
Said band is Radioactive Flowers.
Get out of here.
Yes.
You've got a Radioactive Flowers
yes.
connection.
Yes. And so I would stay with them, Chris Hughes.
I know Chris.
And Chris and I are still friends. In fact,
good.
I texted him
say,
like last week asking for a Flowers record that I needed for a fan. So we're still close, but he broke my heart and I blamed Bowling Green, Kentucky. I was like, I hate that town. It cost me the love of my life. I come there
I'm
to watch
move
him play
there.
Me. I hate it. So I called him first and said, you're never going to believe this. Of all haters,
yeah.
guess who's going to Bowling Green, Kentucky and open a business?
That's great.
So I did that. But when the economy tanked and the luxury item business wasn't so great.
Right.
Because I had worked for record labels and I had bought national marketing for all of these artists, like Billboard magazine ads and different things, TV spots and produced radio spots. The general sales manager at WNKY came to me and he said, what are you going to do? You're getting a divorce. You have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old to feed and you're selling your franchise back to the corporate owner in Nashville. What are you going to do for a living? And I said, you know what? I have no idea. I guess I'll go back to music. And he said, but you have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And you said you left music because it wasn't the place for a family. It wasn't
yeah.
the place for a single mom for sure. And I said, well, you've got a good point. And he said, why don't you come work for me for 6 months just as a consultant? Just go around town and tell people how your business grew and you had success by doing business with the television station.
Mm.
I said, are you telling me you're going to pay it forward? Like, you're really just going to pay me to go talk to Captain Dean and tell him that, hey, this TV station really helped me grow my business? And he was like, yeah, actually, that's what I'm doing.
You got paid to interview me
on television. I did. So for 6 months, I went around and talked to people who had been customers of mine at Pool and Spa Depot.
Okay.
And I said, you know what? I've been an advertiser of this TV station for several years, and I've really grown my business because of this relationship. Would you allow me to tell you how I did that? For 6 months, that's all I did. I had lunches, breakfast, coffee with people, and I just told them about how positive my experience was at the TV station. Hmm. So it's been 12 years, and now I'm the general manager, the general sales manager, and I host my own television show.
Yes, you
do. That's all about music.
Yes, you do.
So that's how those dots connect.
I like that.
Yeah.
That was shortened to the
point. So it was meant to be, though.
Well, that's true.
I was in a
obviously
city.
Obviously, fate kind of...
That radioactive flowers made me hate. No, I'm just kidding. And then I come back. And I create my own music legacy.
That's funny, though, because that means I would have been standing next to you
me.
At Gary's one night watching Radioactive Flowers.
You would have.
They were a big they were a big deal.
Yes.
Like, me and several of my friends, my roommates at the time, we would go to just about any Radioactive Flowers show that ever happened. Mostly at Gary's or, I guess,
Baker
at the time
Street.
It was Baker Street.
Yeah.
And so that means that
we were right there together, man. Nobody knew me from Adam. And I loved watching Chris play because he didn't play music in high school. When I grew up with him, he didn't touch an instrument.
Right.
And so to see him on stage playing bass was like, what? And then later he became tour manager for major artists in the music business and went on the road with them.
I ran into him one day in Louisville because he was on tour with Victor Wooten.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what are you doing here? Because I saw him rummaging around backstage and I waved at him and he came up and he was like, hey, I'm working with the Wooten brothers,
know.
You know? I'm like, well, that's pretty cool.
He was with Big Kenny. He's with Shadazy. He was with...
yeah, he really got into
several
the
big
back,
artists.
The
Craig
yeah,
Morgan.
The, yeah.
Probably
but
the
like
longest
tech
time.
Work, right?
Yeah.
He was teching.
He was tour manager.
Tour manager.
So started as a sound engineer that he just learned from his days playing music.
Yep.
And then went to tour manager. So
some
it
of the
was
best
funny.
Ones are self-taught.
Yes.
And not going to some ridiculous school where they teach you how to be a sound engineer.
But I teased him because, you know, here we are in high school, in Hendersonville High School. He was 2 years older than me, and we both loved music and went to see music together, but neither one of us played or performed any kind of music. And then so now all of a sudden, he's tour manager for these huge country music artists, and I'm working for record labels.
Yeah, he was not an active working musician for a very long time. Like, he learned it. He did it. He did it
done.
Well. He was one of the most popular bands in this town.
Yeah.
And for anyone that is unaware of Radioactive Flowers, I have mentioned their name in some past episodes. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, us hardcore Bowling Green music people, we know who that is.
Right.
And they
That's
were
my
a
Bowling
big
Green
deal.
Connection.
They
yes.
were a big deal. That's a great connection, though.
Yeah.
Sad. But true.
No, hey, we
I mean,
are
it,
still so
You
close.
Had a sad moment, but it turned into a good
It was
thing.
A negative instinct about Bowling Green that was really never about Bowling Green. It was personal.
Oh, no,
and,
I
you
get
know,
that.
We worked through
but
it
that's
like
what
all
I mean,
first
I was, like,
loves.
It was sad between you and him. But you end up here
It's
anyway.
All good, but you know what? It showed me the talent that was coming out of this community.
Yeah.
And when I came back and found a voice in a television station that believed in me, and basically
You're
I was
saying that was 12 years ago?
I started
to
the TV
back?
Station 12 years ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
When you were up here, obviously you were up here to see him and see Radioactive Flowers. Did any other bands of that era catch, like, did you pick up on any of the music scene? Or was it just kind of you'd read about them or hear about them through the musicians or maybe flipping through the amplifier or whatever?
No, I was with him. Like, I was here to see him, so I would come spend the weekend with him, and he would have a show, but then he would take me to other shows. So really, he introduced me to a lot of bands. In fact, when I was in Knoxville and when I finally got to college, because I'm 2 years behind him, so for 2 years I followed him here, then I went to Knoxville, and he would send me care packages of like, hey, this is what I'm into right now. And so I would send him care packages back. And so we would kind of do this music swap back in the day before social media or texting. You know, you had to do real mail.
Real mail.
But it's like, dude, I can send you CDs and you're going to love this. And he'd be like, listen to track number, whatever. And we'd talk on the phone and we'd listen to the music and we would just collaborate on what we loved about it.
That's awesome.
It is.
That's a very cool relationship.
It still is a cool relationship.
Exactly.
He's still working in the music business.
Yep.
And
now you are, again.
I help work with artists, and I call him and go, hey, I got this artist I really think you need to hear.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's so cool. But did anything local Bowling Green music scene catch your ear you know that time frame.
There were a lot of amazing artists that come out of here. I probably was more ingrained in Nashville, to be really honest.
Oh, that's fine.
I don't know a bunch of the artists that were coming out of Bowling Green by name. I know if I heard them, I'd probably be like, yeah.
Yeah, because there was a lot.
But there's a lot going on in Nashville.
When you got here and settled, what was the thing that just hit you? And you kind of told me this one day. I don't remember how you worded it, but we were talking, and I think it was at one of the tapings or whatever. And you said this really quick thing to me about, I saw this band and it gave me an idea to start a TV show or something. I can't pinpoint exactly what you said, but maybe you can retell it.
Well, I know that the one thing, we had this joke, you know, when you have a backstage pass laminate on. In the music industry, we called them bitch magnets because anybody that had one on attracted every bitch for 100 miles. And so it's like, don't forget your bitch magnet for the show tonight.
I like
And it's
that.
Like all access, so everybody...
I will never look at that the same way.
Every laminate is now known as a bitch magnet.
I like it.
But I promise you, you can test the theory. If you have an all access pass on, literally, people look at you differently when you walk
by. No, I've had backstage passes at Starwood.
So I've got boxes of them.
You can imagine the people in the outside of the fence like, hey man, who are you?
Well, I have boxes of them at my house that my kids laugh about because they're kind of in this giant ball now with all the strings and everything. But they'll go through them and they'll laugh and look at the old pictures of these artists from 100 years ago.
It's
and that's
like
how we
20.
Identified who was supposed to be in certain areas.
Right.
Like, that's part of my job to have that on. It's not to show you that I'm cool.
Yeah.
It's that I have all access, meaning I can
Security
go anywhere.
Security has to know that
this person
it's okay.
is VIP or this person is just for a meet and greet. So that was the language that we spoke in the business. So what I noticed is that backstage pass was so important to everybody. It was a coveted place to be. It was forbidden. It was off limits. Not just anybody could get access backstage.
Right.
So what I tried to create with this music segment that we have now grown into a music show is a backstage element of just private time with an artist. So our 4-minute segment that we did every week on CBS for 2.5 years was just kind of, there was nobody in the room. It wasn't an Austin City Limits where you have a live audience.
It
was literally
it was
me and you
and
our production guys. And it's just us letting you be you on a stage where you feel most comfortable. We don't do it in our studio.
Right.
We put you in your natural environment. We bring our lights, we bring our cameras, we bring our microphones. But you know what? You're putting on a show because you love it.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to show on TV was the passion of you guys just making music.
And that's where the idea came from. It's just out of the
my
blue.
My backstage experience.
Yeah.
It was what do I see?
I work at a television station.
Yeah.
How can I take that, something that I think is cool, and turn that into a visual, entertaining thing to watch, but also learn about these bands, get these bands more exposure?
Right.
Because radio, it's like you go on, hey, we're playing at Tidball's Friday night. We go on at 11. Here's our new song. 3 minutes later, it's back to REO Speedwagon.
Right.
So, and that is,
which is
great.
Great.
It's what we've
tickets.
Always had. But people don't see you.
Right.
They don't, you know, you can upload stuff to video now, but that's still, you and I come from this era where we were stapling flyers to poles and making phone calls and putting stamps on envelopes. So I'm still the old
school
guy.
Street teams, man.
Yeah. I'm still the old school person that believes that that stuff still works too, but we do have these new things, and the new things being the internet, still kind of new, and with your help in television on a local level, it really opened up the door. I would have never seen Full Frontal Saurus on television, but you put them on there.
They probably never would have expected to be on television.
Exactly.
And here's the whole package. You know, when internet came out, people can upload anything they want to YouTube. They can upload whatever they want to their own Facebook page, Instagram, whatever it is. But to be able to have mass appeal in a location where you've already got guaranteed viewership is something a little more special. So that's what I decided when I was GM, and local does matter to me. Local matters to everybody that works for this TV station. But one thing that no one was talking about locally was music, arts and entertainment, which is definitely my passion. So I said, well, who's going to tell me that I can't take 4 minutes out of a news broadcast and make it the music show? So I did that. But not only do we do the music on the television station on CBS, but I had my production guys rip that music out of there and post it as its own entity mm-hmm. on our social media pages.
Right.
And then also post it to our website and also post it to our YouTube. We tag the artist. So we're giving you basically an electronic press kit.
Exactly.
And that's what I wanted to create
for you.
It is an EPK that you don't have to pay for.
No.
Because I support you personally.
You can take this from your hometown. A lot of these bands were local bands. So you're getting a hometown made for free.
I'm your publicist, man.
Exactly.
I'm just handing it to you.
Out of love and respect.
Mixing, mastering.
Helping you add one thing more to your kit, your press kit.
I've got an audio engineer in here. You know, you're not having to pay to go in the studio and pay for time. My guys do that because they also love it.
Yep.
So here we're going to mix this one track, and we're going to take great photos, and we're going to tease our audience all week to tune in to see Captain Dean and El Astronauta because we believe in it. Like, tune in,
tag,
and we're
going to
do it.
I've been on it twice.
You have.
That's the best story.
The first one's the best one.
The first one was the worst one because it never aired.
But you know what? It's so cool. I still have it.
It's a funny... I know. I'm sure it's out there, but it never aired.
But that was you and I getting... We were meant to get to know each other.
Right. We had a great time. But I not only appeared as a guest on The Scene, which is what it was originally called. You've changed it lately. As we're speaking, you're on the cusp of coming to Marquee Backstage.
Yes.
And that is its new title. But it spawned off of The Scene.
That's right.
Which was really based... wholly on, or is that the right word?
Yeah.
Wholesomely?
Entirely based, yes.
On local music. Absolutely. Bowling Green music scene, which also includes the surrounding areas and various people. I know you've had other bands from, or artists from maybe Tennessee or Eastern, Northern Kentucky, whatever, have come down to be on this show because you've been doing it for a long time.
Right.
And like this podcast, it's like, I've got four episodes I need before the next month. I need to get to filming.
Right.
And so I can relate to you on how stressful that part
with your real job.
Yeah, exactly. But you started The Scene.
Right.
And you have, we could list every single band and artist from this area. You have honestly, and I believe, covered all of them. Anyone that obviously would agree to do it.
Probably not all, but now some of those bands that we have covered, I would like to say yes, that most. In 28 months, we have never once re-aired an episode ever.
Right.
We have had original shows every single week for 28 months.
I mean, you texted me one day and go, I need somebody.
Yeah.
And I was like, Lee Harvey.
Yes.
And he did it.
He did it. And it's kind of like, you know what? Something happened and somebody couldn't get off work.
Right.
And they're saying, hey, Julie, I'm so sorry. We can't make it. And it's like, you don't understand.
That's a common problem, though.
I have to have original content for my viewers every single week. They depend on me. I'm not going to re-air something, and I'm not going to not have an episode.
And you've done great.
I don't
want
to let people down. Thank goodness it has all worked.
It's all worked out.
I book all the bands.
Knock on the boardroom table
here.
That's it. But that's what started this whole thing for you, and you have been able to merge what you do in the television market, your passion and love for music, your love and support for local music, you have put it all into one place. And you own that, and you control that, and you make damn sure it is done, and it's out there, and it's done right.
Yeah,
and
ask
the person
my staff.
Is put in
I'm pretty hard to work for
in a way that you would never get.
Oh my gosh, no! I mean, from every I don't like that cut. I don't like that camera shot. Or hey, you know what? Can we do something different with this graphic? And I don't like the fade and the transition.
Right.
I'm
but they're
very
easy,
critical.
Quick fixes. Like, you guys have got a rhythm now. I think. I'd say, the first four episodes, you got comfortable?
Yes, and you know, we also created The Scene music calendar because
one
thing that the Amplifier was doing is showcasing local music performance in print, and we really don't have that here. I know that we have several publications that talk about community events, but I think the music got lost in the community.
No,
so to be
true.
Able to showcase the music, we have a 60-second commercial that we air on all three networks every single week, still to this day,
and 100%
free to artists and free
great.
To venues. produce. Nobody pays me for that.
The better thrill. I love the thrill of when I see our band's name. Yes. I was like, oh, that's so cool.
And you don't even have to submit it to me, literally.
No, because you are in tune with it.
We study every single week who's coming. And you know what? If there's not enough content to fill 60 seconds, we're looking at Beaver Dam and wherever else is close that we can send people to see the most, the greatest and the best in
right,
live
because
local
that,
music.
Right, because that's part of the, that's part of the music
scene.
It's
still us, man.
Scene. It's local. But you've done that for a while. We could go through a gigantic list of names. But you know who you are if you've been on the scene. And a lot of us owe an enormous amount of thanks to you.
Thank you.
Because you did something for us that nobody in this town ever even batted an eye about. Thought it was even a good idea. To them, it was a waste of time.
If it was talking about one show, yes.
Yeah.
Because then you're just going to do the same routine that you do for any other community event. But
right.
But you shouldn't have to do that for a show.
Yeah.
You should have people coming to shows because they genuinely love your music.
Exactly.
So what I could do to do that is say, hey, you know what? You may have heard of this band, but you don't know what they sound like.
Yeah.
So let me go to their sound check before a show and give you a sneak peek. Let me talk to the artist for just 3 or 4 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm going to get off the stage, and we're going to record one full song of their sound check.
Right.
Hopefully sound check is done several hours before the doors open.
Of course.
Not in this market, I've noticed. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you'd like to give people time to get off the couch, jump in the shower, get ready,
right.
and grab a drink, and go see some great music.
Exactly.
And so that was the concept. I mean, I approached every venue in town and said, here's what I'd like to do. If you've got a big show coming up and the sales aren't as strong, or even if the sales are strong and you want to show people that it's a sold-out show, but they should still love this artist, let
right.
me come in with the television.
Yeah.
Let me come record this. I'll do a Facebook Live. You don't even have to be on TV.
And that's beneficial for both the band and the venue. Because it's free advertisement.
On a television station,
on a television
who already
station.
Has an audience tuning in
and
just
not
to
only
see
is
what
it,
I'm up to.
It may be aired on television, and you have to be there at a certain time or set your DVR,
right.
or in my case, a VCR.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to have the access to YouTube and internet now, for bands to be able to be like, we got to do this awesome thing, check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because not everyone is available to watch TV at noon on a Thursday.
No, which is why we live stream on Facebook.
Yeah.
But we also clip out just that segment of that show and post it all by itself on Facebook. And it will live there until it's completely lost in our social media.
Until Al Gore shuts down the internet.
Until global warming takes over.
The scene ran for a while. I recorded an episode, but it never aired because my band broke up. Before the actual taping of it or the airing of it.
I'll never forget the day you walked in my office and you're like, dude,
I had to come here personally and tell you. Yeah.
It was brutal.
It was
absolutely heartbreaking. I don't know which one of us was more heartbroken.
Probably me.
Probably. But we've made up for it.
We did. And I was so proud of what we did. Because when you do these tapings, especially the way it was done originally, you would frantically be like, okay, we got to do this segment, we have to tape this, we have to do this, then we film the song.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
And then you say thank you and move on to the next artist, because you literally would do 4 to 6 artists in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you had El Astronauta on. This was the coolest thing about this is it was our brand new band. This was a new band that we got started, and you kept asking me, when are you going to be ready? When are you going to be ready? And I was like,
it's your time.
I don't know. And finally, we felt like we were ready. And you were like, gotta have you on. You've got to do this. Before we played our first live show, we did a taping for the scene. And as we're sitting there getting ready to do all this stuff, you were like, oh, by the way, it's going to be called Marquee Backstage now. And I was like, why?
Trademark, man. It's all business.
We had to
show interstate usage of the name in order to trademark the name.
But that was awesome because we were kind of part of that.
You were.
Like, beginning of that.
You were.
But it made up for, personally for me, it made up for the lost episode. But I had this brilliant idea to go with the, because you're, what I was saying earlier is you're always like frantic, like, what am I going to say? How do we need to tape this? How do we need to promote this?
You make me look so
spot?
Unprepared.
We got a 10 second spot.
Right.
What do I say? What do I need to do?
I want you guys to be creative and show your personality.
And I immediately was like, I've got an idea for the promo. And the whole crew was like, great. let's do that, you know, and that's what we did.
That's exactly
you were
what
thrilled.
We did.
You were like, good, I don't have to think about anything.
Oh, it was fantastic. And it was a joke that most of us understood.
You and I understood it perfectly because there were pictures from that taping that never aired.
Yes.
Of you and you interviewing me, and I'm wearing my Captain Dean hat. And so I had the idea that we would sit down and look at each other and look away and look back at each other and go, have we done this? Is this like deja vu? And then the guys stand up behind me and knock the hat off and go, no.
It was perfect, though.
Because it was a great way to show this is a new band. This is a new thing. This is not me bringing an old thing back with a different name.
Right.
This is literally a fresh start.
New band, new show name.
And it was comical. And that's what I loved about it.
Is it was perfect. And you it was played perfectly along. Us.
Yeah, it was perfect.
No, I'm so I loved the first part. And you know what? It just made perfect sense. And I'm so glad that we did it. I'm so glad you were there for the beginning of what is now becoming Marquee Backstage.
Exactly. And that was the only time El Astronauta will ever perform at the warehouse.
Well, there's that.
We are not that type of music.
Well.
But it was awesome. And I thank you so much for that opportunity.
So
and on top of that, I thank you on behalf of this entire music scene.
Thank you.
What you have done for all of us is given us another outlet of getting our music out, of getting our name out, of getting our just merch, like just being on television and airing the websites and airing where you can find
social
this band.
Media, yeah.
It helps the bands gain a new audience and maybe sell some stuff along the way. But just gaining fans and getting your music out, that's what this is all about.
And it's people helping people, and that's all it is. You know, all we ask is that you guys share what we give you. If we're going to give you an electronic press kit, share it. Because you know what? Our logos are on there.
Exactly.
So hopefully you will help grow our brand. It is.
It is 100% mutual.
It is.
The station gets recognition. The band gets recognition. The venue gets recognition.
Right. The community gets recognition for the talent that it creates.
We all hold the trophy high. We're from Bowling Green.
That's right. And thanks to you and this music community, we've been able to take a 3 to 4 minute weekly music segment and create a half hour weekly music show.
Which is even better.
That is not just airing in Bowling Green, but it's airing in Atlanta, Georgia, Albany, Georgia, Salisbury, Maryland, soon to be Denver. You know, we've got 10 stations so far that this music is going to hit.
Yeah.
And it is beautiful to be able to take what we created right here in Bowling Green and share it with the masses.
Well, by the time this episode airs, of the Sound Atlas, this will have already happened.
Right.
But you're on the cusp right now as we speak of Marquee Backstage making its official debut. Not the quick interview and one song performance segment, which was what the scene was built on. You have been doing that up until this point. So as we're speaking, Marquee Backstage is about to come out.
Right.
You showed me here when we got here some segments of what it's going to be like. And I was absolutely blown away. So I cannot wait to see what comes of this. And you have got the absolute, like, dead-on perfect way of putting it together.
Well, you know what? I flipped it on its head. What we did with the scene in the middle of a news program, you know, you're coming from a commercial break in a news show and people are thinking about the weather or whatever we left to go to break with. The last thing they expect is music.
Right.
So I came on as a quick buffer. Hey, Dean, I want to talk to you about El Astronauta and the music that you've got coming up. You talk to me for a few seconds. And it's like, hey, let's hear a little bit of that. And then I exit the stage and you play.
Hmm.
So there was so much demand for that. And honestly, our social media feedback was phenomenal. The demand that we have had at this TV station because of what we've done for music has been so incredible that when I was approached by our ownership to create a half-hour music show, it was a no-brainer.
Oh, of course.
But the one contingency I had was, can we do it the opposite? Can we have a lot more talking and a little less music?
Right.
And they said, what do you mean? Well, I want to give our viewers a backstage pass. I want to sit down with Dean Collier and the guys of El Astronauta, and I want to find out what makes them them. I want to find out what makes you tick. I want to know what your plans are and what your goals are. I want that backstage experience that no one else can have, and I want to share it.
And the musician, like I told you when you showed me the segment earlier of the first episode that's going to be, I was telling you right then and there, I was like, I like seeing the amps.
Mm-hmm.
I like seeing the gear. I like seeing the cases being unloaded. Because that's my world.
I know.
And I love that stuff. And the musicians like to see the gear.
Right.
So to get the shot of all the guitars on the stand or what amps they're using, like, we love that stuff.
Of course.
And to see it in high def.
But that's your world. And you know what? That's what the music lover doesn't get to see. We record this show at Thunder Sound Studios in Franklin, Kentucky. And you know what? That is near and dear to our heart because we all love Billy Swayze.
Right.
And you know, I had a great talk with his mom, Bonnie, and said, peace, love, respect, pass it on. That's what Billy stood for. But what he really wanted to do is share the music of his friends. He wanted to help support his friend's music be heard by the masses, and that's what I want to do. I'm here to do that for Billy.
So Marquee Backstage is exclusively being done at Thunder Sound?
These first episodes are being done at Thunder Sound
But you'll
Studios.
Still kind of go out and do various things?
No, we will take this show on the road, and we will record in Albany. We will record in Atlanta. We are going to take this on the road. Because
this
we
is terrible.
I know. It's horrible to see the growth
you
of this.
You get to travel the country and
I know, doing music
help people
is
put music
kind of like
it.
Back to my roots.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we've found a great partnership with Bonnie Swayze, and Troy Mims is running that studio,
oh,
and
good.
He helps us as well.
Yeah.
But I think doing the show in a recording studio that very few music lovers have ever been inside a studio, they don't know what that looks like.
True.
And you've got some young artists who've never been in a recording studio either. They're recording at home
just
or wherever
learning
they can.
Experience, you know.
So let me bring you into a recording studio, into the environment of a true musician. Let's get your head in the right space where you can talk to me about what magic is happening around you at the moment.
Right.
Let me get to know you. Let me peel the layers back a little bit and let's just get to know you intimately. And then we're going to have song performances in the show as well, but we're going to use those as the soundtrack to your story. And so we are literally flipping this upside down, and I think you're going to love it.
But locally speaking, you're not giving up on the Bowling Green music scene. You're not going to Albany to film things in Albany and forgetting about. You are going to find a way, because this is what your goal was, is to incorporate bands and artists from this area mixed in with bands and artists that you're bringing in to do these from other outlets because of the syndication of where they're being aired.
Right.
Is that the right word? Syndication?
We will
I don't
eventually
speak television.
Syndicate. Well, no, we will syndicate the show in other markets, and we are syndicating
it. Right, other markets. There's other markets. That's the word I was looking for.
There are other markets. Right now, the show will be on all marquee broadcasting stations that we own.
Right.
So it's something that they believe in, and we do want to show local talent in the other markets that we're in, but we will never turn our back on local South Central Kentucky talent. And you know, I may have somebody that's actually playing gigs in Atlanta that's from Bowling Green and say, hey, we're going to be shooting at whatever studio or venue.
Right.
And hey, can you come by and work this in your schedule to be on the show?
Well, I don't know.
And that's the tricky part about my job is I have a real job running a TV station.
Yeah.
So we still shoot 2 days in a row, 2 days back to back.
Yeah.
And we shoot 4 shows in 2 days.
That's amazing. But that says a lot about what this is. This is something that you're not losing focus on what it was. You're making it better.
I'm telling
you. But
more
you're
people.
Also bringing everyone from here is still invited to the party.
That's right.
Just because you did an episode of The Scene 2 years ago doesn't mean you can't do a part of Marquee Backstage, correct?
And don't forget, there are some artists, Dean, that don't like to talk. You
know,
there
I
are
know.
Some artists that are so shy.
They don't do this.
But they get in front of a microphone and they do a great show. There's not a whole lot of engagement with the artist. They're kind of in their own world and they're performing out into the space.
Yeah.
But if I were to say, hey, can you sit down with me for 4 hours and talk? And they're like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
But thanks for what you did
I'll
for me
do
on
it.
The scene. Yeah, I know you'll do it, and we'll have a great time.
I'm a talker.
But it's a different formatted show.
Yeah, it is.
And I think it's going to be a different artist that really wants this kind of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to dig deep. Some people that I know really well, I may ask some really tough questions, but I already know the answer. And I'm going to tell their story in such a deliberate and loving and intentional way that I can guarantee you people are going to fall in love with you.
Yeah.
Because I have. If I love it, I'm pretty sure I can influence someone else to love it also.
Love it. That's great. That's so cool.
It's who we are, man. It's what I was meant to do when I was brought to Bowling Green. I firmly believe that.
I firmly believe that. Now that you've said all these things, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. It was fate, and you're doing something that you want to do, but you're doing something that none of us could have ever done on our own. So thank you.
You're welcome. You know what? It's a pleasure to be able to be a part of the music community.
And you are.
With no talent to give. No performance talent to give.
The
it's just my heart and soul.
The talent you have is what you have in knowledge of marketing and promotion.
Thank you.
And that is something most musicians simply do not have. They're good at writing songs and taking pictures on the railroad track.
Oh my gosh, in front of a barn. But you know, when I can send music, if you send me a SoundCloud link and I send it to my contacts in Nashville or New York or LA, and then I get a phone call an hour later from Rolling Stone who's like,
who's this?
I'm gonna put this in the next episode, in the next magazine, and they're gonna be one of the 10 new country acts you need to know. Wow. And it's like, wait, slow down. This person doesn't have press photos.
Yeah.
They don't have a manager. Like, no. You don't understand. They just came to my office and played me these tracks that they recorded in their garage. But because I knew that there was something powerful about it, I wanted to just share it with you and get your feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that person did make it in Rolling Stone. And guess what? You know, I had to pitch it as a manager for a little bit until we could get them in the right hands. But that's what this show's going to do. The
right.
show is going to get the talent from this market in front of so many people that they didn't expect.
Yeah.
Just because I've been places in the music business, and the people that I've worked with in the past know that I'm not going to put my name on something that's terrible.
No, I can stand behind you on that because I've known you for a while. I can see you get it.
I do. I have a lot of people who want to be on our show, and you know, there's a lot of people that haven't made it.
Yeah.
And not because they're not good, but because they're not great yet.
Great.
If I feel like you're ready to go to the next step.
They just don't have the right way of working it.
They haven't figured it out yet, but I'm going to put my name on it, and I'm going to take you guys by the hand, and I'm going to walk you to the next level. And you know what? I'm going to beg and scream for everybody to pay attention. Now, what you do with it from there is on you. I'm just kidding.
Oh, that's awesome.
Maybe we'll create another series after this one.
Yeah, exactly. Julie.
Dean.
Before we wrap this up.
Yes.
You've had an incredible story to tell, an incredible life filled with music, all over the map, especially in the state of Tennessee. you came to Bowling Green about, 12 years ago, is that correct? From where we are?
I came to Bowling Green in 2004 to open a business. But yes,
so,
TV business 12 years ago.
But you've been in and out of this town for a while, but you've been here for a while.
Yes.
And, good Lord, I'm terrible with words today. You've been here for a while. And music scene-wise, you've been involved in the music scene for quite a while as a fan.
Right.
But now,
several years.
Yeah, you're a big fan because you're a fan that goes out and does this amazing stuff for everybody. Is it too awkward to end this by asking you the question of who are some of your favorite artists and bands, or do you want to not single people out? Because I usually end these episodes by saying, who's some of your favorite people in the local music scene? But I do that with other bands and other musicians.
Right.
Who usually go, oh, I love this band really because they're my friend and I'm really a big fan of this band and blah, blah, blah. You're in a different position.
Right.
So I don't want to throw that at you.
You know what I'm going to say? Difficult. I'm probably not going to name specific artists, but what I will say, artists who genuinely want to share their music mm-hmm. with the masses of music fans out there are the ones that work the hardest.
Yep.
If I watch their social media feed, they are engaging with their audience every single day. I'm talking.
Oh, you're speaking about me.
I might be. You know, there are several of you out there who
there
own social media. The reason that certain artists that will go unnamed with initials like TS, they're not necessarily the most talented, but they're the most skilled at making relationships.
Yeah.
You know what? In order to be a great artist, you have to get in touch with the people who beg for your music. The people you expect to pay for your downloads and
exactly.
pay to see you in a venue are the people you need to engage via social media every day. I'm not saying take a picture of your dinner. I'm just saying, you know what? I'm at this recording studio today, and I just thought I'd share it with you.
Exactly.
And that's who I have the most respect for in this market are the artists, not only who know that they're talented,
right.
but the artists that work. The hardest
yeah.
to give me that sneak peek, that backstage, behind-the-scenes glimpse yeah. of what your real life
to
looks
like.
To
let you know it's not just a part-time thing. It's a passionate, everyday thing.
You want me to go on this ride with you? You better invite me. And that's exactly what I'm saying. As a music lover, I will support everything you do, but you got to give me the ticket to get there.
Exactly. And I'm going to give you a VIP.
Can I have an all-access bitch magnet for your show, too?
You texted me earlier today, and it's like, I'm still good to go for the interview, but would you all like to be on the new Marquee Backstage? Like, yeah.
I would love it. I would love it. You know, we've got different genres of music, and we've got different different backgrounds for artists, but everybody has a common goal, and it's right. a story that they want to share so that more people will connect.
Exactly. That's I cannot think of for. A better way to end it.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much for having
Thank
me
Thank you. And is there before I do wrap it up, is there anything we missed? Is there anything you were coming in here going, I can't wait to tell this story or talk about this band? Or
no, I just hope everybody will follow us on this new journey.
Yes.
Watch Marquee Backstage here in South Central Kentucky on NBC Saturday nights at 10 p.m. Listen, this is the lead into Saturday Night Live. I did that on purpose.
Wow, that's brilliant.
The show
brilliant.
Premieres on the season premiere date yeah. of SNL. It's a perfect way to feed into that SNL live
Finally,
music performance.
We got something to watch before us.
Yes. So I'm delivering that to you now. I hope you'll watch. I hope all of your listeners
Excellent.
Will tune in to see
and
what we're doing.
Obviously, WNKY has a CBS and an NBC.
Mm-hmm. And a MeTV. We have three networks.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And will it be aired on all of those?
In this market, we are only going to air it on NBC for now.
On NBC.
We will still do formerly known as The Scene
right.
segment on CBS. So
okay.
every artist will have three song performances in our half hour show.
Okay.
We'll pull one song out and we'll air it on The Scene on CBS the next
right.
week. And then we're going to embargo that last song and do something really cool with it every single week that people don't really know where to find just
That's
yet
because awesome.
We're planning something fun for that. There may be a podcast down the line as
Podcasts
well.
Podcasts are fun.
They are fun. But you know what? We've got lots of great plans for this show. But the one thing I want everybody to understand is it really is always local.
Yeah, it is.
So
That's
I'm excited.
True.
We got big things coming. There's a line that I use in the show, and it says, with every song, there's a story, and with every story, there's a life behind it.
Yep.
Join us next week on Marquee Backstage to
Damn,
find out
really
who
good
we
at
discover
this.
Next. That's it. But it's about the life behind the story, behind the song.
It's true. And all songs are a story to tell. I mean,
they
you
are.
Don't just write down gibberish, you know? There's usually something there. So.
That's right.
That's great. I think I've about covered everything.
I think you got it, man.
I hope so.
If you want crazy other artist stories, we'll have to talk about that another time.
That'll be your yeah. part two, right?
That will be, yeah, part two. Yeah, we'll get there.
Obviously, anyone listening can find you on social media. You're
yes.
on Facebook. You're on YouTube.
Instagram.
Instagram. Yeah. I'll follow you on Instagram. But you have your personal stuff, but you also have the television station.
I do.
And you kind of interact with both. Both of them.
I do. Yes, so, I engage with WNKY yeah. social media, Marquee Backstage. So we're at Marquee Backstage on social on Instagram, Facebook.
Okay.
I am at Backstage Jules on Instagram
That's
and
right.
at Julie Milam on Facebook. Or you can follow us here at WNKY.
Yep. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you, they can reach on any of those
Absolutely.
Platforms.
Absolutely. Send me any kind of message that you want. If you've got great music that you think needs to be showcased, please reach out to me on social media. I'd be happy to give it a listen and see if it's the perfect fit for Marquee Backstage.
Yep. That is awesome. And hopefully it will be.
Hopefully it will be.
If it's crap, don't send it.
Hey, you know what? I anticipate this show coming on for years and years to come. So we've already got all of 2019 booked, which
Fantastic.
Is great.
Yep.
So we're going to start scheduling 2020 soon, and I can't wait for you guys to
well,
hear it.
Well, good, because that means this episode will air at perfect timing.
Yes.
So get ready to get in there and get 2020 rolling.
That's it.
Julie,
thank you
so much for your time.
Hey, man.
I came to your workplace at the beautiful WNKY studios. We're sitting in the boardroom and
listening to my very favorite
yeah, we're
Johnny
listening
Cash.
To Johnny Cash in the background for anyone that can hear that. And I want to thank you so much for not only your time today, but for everything you've done for this music scene.
Thank you.
Can tell a lot of things on a personal note, but I can speak on behalf of many, many people here. We are all so appreciative of what you have done for us and what you're going to do for us. And just thank you so much.
You're welcome. And it's not just me. I have a fantastic team
you
of music
do.
Lovers here. And they don't roll their eyes
Your
when I come up with
fantastic.
An idea, but they love it.
Yeah.
They go out to support local music in these venues just like I do.
Yeah.
You know, we have listening parties and we listen to see who we think is going to be the next big thing coming mm-hmm. out of town. So we're in it to win it with you guys. So thank you for all you do and for allowing our team to support you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.